Confusion matrix.
Yeehaw, Yosemite Al. Dude, using an AI sidekick to dig your digital ditches while you twiddle your spurs, nothing screams cowboy like outsourcing your own graph to an algorithm. You've basically lashed yourself to a silicon shill, turning from a lone wolf into a robotic rodeo clown, begging for mercy before the deadline stampede. If dead-eyed desperados in dusty towns had this laziness, the frontier'd have settled faster, not with grit, but with Control-C, Control-V. You're like a low-rent Jake, the kind who gets tossed out of saloons for cheating, only your cheating partner's binary. Next time, saddle up your own brain and show some goddamn grit, city boy. Otherwise, you're less cowboy, more cow aided by computer. Get on with it, partner.
It's not rolling yet.
No, we're not rolling yet, but we are rolling now. Hello again from sunny Scotland. How are you doing?
It's reached you.
Finally. How is it in the south?
Yeah, getting roasting as you'd expect. So yeah, everything that you wanted to escape from is now arrived.
That's right. I live up here for a reason, but the heat is somewhat following me. But the sort of ambient hotness is only around sort of 22 degrees, which is right at my comfort zone stroke limit. So above, got to walk over, do a walk after this. And it's going to be mostly in open, hot sun. So I might be really, really regretting that. About 2 hours' time. But, you know, it's Scotland. There's beautiful countryside. Hopefully I won't get absolutely massacred by midges. And we'll see how we get on. Yeah,
excellent. So what are we talking about today?
I think we're going to talk more about vibe coding for a bit.
Yeah,
but what's what everyone's doing, isn't it? I mean, it's everything going forward. Or maybe it's not. I've got some thoughts that maybe we'll cover on the back end of this as to how this could go to hell in a handbasket. But I do want to discuss this week's experiences with vibe coding, which work as a somewhat of an antidote to my last week's enthusiasm for this particular enterprise. Which relates to vibe coding under pressure, which is an exciting seat of the pants story that you need to buckle in for. That's going to lead on to some other discussions about skill sets, I think, for people who do what we do.
And I've been vibing a bit as well, so I'll have some input on your opinions, I think.
Well, let's get going. So I've got I had a bit of a deadline turn up almost out of nowhere earlier this week. It was nothing life changing. It's just, we've got this thing. I need you to demonstrate the thing that you built, to a client. Which funnily enough, after all of this didn't actually happen, but I had a deadline and I was going to stick with it. I had like a 2-day sort of head start on it. And I got a little bit high on my vibe coding supply and was like, well, look, I'd built something pretty decent, largely by hand. It's like a dashboard. I won't go into details. It's not massively interesting, but it's interesting in its own right, but we'll take another episode. But essentially a BI dashboard with AI components and like AI summaries, that type of thing. And I wasn't really very happy with it, but it's a bit sellotape and string. It was only needed for a demonstration for a client who doesn't have anything particularly sophisticated right now. Therefore, it was going to look good. So I had my original and I decided, but I was like, but I can do better than this because I've got magic vibe coding at the end of my magic fingers, right? And I can build something really that's going to blow their minds within 2 days, right? Because last week I rebuilt a whole chat client in 18 hours, right? So I felt like, you know, Superman, maybe closer to Batman or Iron Man, I don't know, but super powered, empowered, right? So I set about doing this, and essentially, rather than polluting it with my terrible prior efforts, I pretty much started again from scratch, went through some of the process I went through before, and that's key. I went through some of the process that I went through before in terms of stipulating what I want and how I wanted it to do it and how I wanted it to behave, right? And mm-hmm. and just got it to build some stuff. Built in Marimo and with various bits and pieces tacked onto that. And the first couple of passes at this were really good. Well, I say really good. I say really good for no effort, really, right?
Yeah.
And so I was flying. I was like, okay, we can just keep going like this and soon I'll have something that's going to take over the world, right? And, you know, like typical, like ego coding central. And I was doing really well, actually. And I got to the evening before the day. So I had like the end of that evening and then the morning the next day to be ready. And then just this error popped up, right? And it wasn't a particularly sinister one. It was just a formatting problem. And I went and had a quick poke around. No, I can't see it. Just, I don't have time for this. I'll just get the model to sort it out. And just let it go, right? And didn't even supervise it. Just fix this, right? It'll fix it in 2 seconds. Which it didn't, right? It couldn't. And it bashed away at it by what looks like 10 minutes, right? And it had it just gave up, right? It gave up. And not only did it give up, because we'd had several iterations of its dashboard, right? And it's its own dashboard with its own code that I'd done none of that it was trying to fix. And it went, it must be something fundamental with Marimo. So I'm giving up now. You should just use this dashboard here. And then gave me the link to the one that I did, right? Completely disregarded everything they had done. And then I went in and looked at the repo and it just ripped it to pieces, right? It's created all this weird new stuff, like 19 different test bloody notebooks, and it ripped to pieces the core one that we were working on and sort of re-put it back together so it didn't really do what it did before. Half the stuff was missing because it had just deleted stuff. It's like, well, what's this? Like you would do in certain situations, you should progressively comment stuff out or remove it or whatever and run to see if you get the error, because eventually you'll find where it is. I mean, there's better ways of doing it, but this is what it chose to do. And it didn't replace it, right? Because it had forgotten it had done it, right? Because it has, you know, the context was completely filled up. And it was a total mess. And I looked at it, I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And so this was the evening before the day, and it was like late on. Like, so not only was this reckless vibe coding, it was reckless late night vibe coding. The worst kind, right? And I just didn't know what to do. I was looking at this going, not only do I still get that error, but now everything's been exploded. And I spent a little time poked around. Eventually I found out it was just an indentation problem with, the triple quotes, multi-line text thing in Python, right?
Yeah.
There's some weirdness around indenting it that different applications will handle differently, right? So some of them can't handle it when you've not indented that in a certain way. And it was something buried right down inside of the way that Marimo was handling those multi-line text fields. It's not interesting or relevant. It just took me about 10 minutes to figure out, right? And which meant I could have just fixed this and I wouldn't have had all of this. And it was a mess. It was a nightmare. And it got to the point where I poked around for a bit and I was like, I can't do this. I don't have the time to try and piece this back together, to try the few different things that I thought maybe I can do this. And then literally, and also in classic high on your own supply mode, hadn't been, and nor had the model, despite me telling it, hadn't been progressively checking things in.
That was going to be my question. Yeah. Is showing this was on a Git branch and you just trash that and go back to main.
You
right?
think me being a responsible programmer, but I was, you know, I was vibing it. I was like red-eyed, frantically not typing, watching someone else typing virtually, like completely nuts, right? This is all nuts. I'm embarrassed to be stating this on the record, right? But it had done most of its damage in one bloody fell swoop. But the last check-in was mountains ago, right? And but at least it had some stable state of the stuff that I'd worked on. So I ended up having to basically go back, and the rest is sort of history. I went back to my original. I used a few bits and pieces that I'd salvaged from what the AI had done, and actually pulled something pretty decent together in time. But like then my morning the next day was really stressful, right? Pulling this together that should have been refining something that was half decent, and ended up me cobbling something together, and I felt quite disappointed. So when the client got called out to an urgent meeting just before, I was like, oh, thank God for that. But I did show it to the other guys that turned up on the call, and they thought it was amazing. And I was like, well, this is good. This is good, because I felt I half-assed this accidentally, and you think it's good. So I'm all good. So all's well that ends well.
Just to labour on that Git point, what was the toolset you were using? Because I've been using the agent, there's one called Klein within VS Code, and you can basically, it must have its own built-in Git branching that it's doing. It doesn't tell you it's doing it, but there's a button, so it can do it 72 steps, and then you can go back to the prompt and press restore, and it'll restore the task or task and files, and it just roll everything back.
No, so this was using AMP, which is nascent to the extreme. So AMP is a good, it's quite a sophisticated agent that is missing half the requisite functionality, things like that. And Warp is the same. So I'm using bleeding edge stuff here, which is perhaps part of the learning from this. You can instruct the models to check in as they go along, which they may or may not do. But if I go back to my my OCAT repo we talked about last week, the instructions in there are so explicit, right? And I've kept it so pared back, and I only let it do small things at a time, and I keep a close eye on it. I kind of threw all that out the window, right? I just didn't have the time to do the groundwork. I went in some weird hybrid mode of sort of the exploratory mode that we're very used to doing. That's just part of our job. And while also trying to produce something finished, right? Which is just these two things are not part of the same part of the process. And, you know, looking back on it, it's just the way you're an idiot, right? I did it all wrong. Right. I can't blame the model for this, really, because I didn't give it everything it needed. Right. And I think it's a little bit, if anything, it is back on the high on my own supply thing. I got too arrogant. I thought I was more powerful than I was. And I'm sure there's some sort of superhero analogy in it. I'm thinking like Superman 2 with General Zod and stuff. All of this stuff, I don't know, there's something in there, but it was just bad.
So I haven't got to offer an alternative to that. I mean, it's slightly more Batman in that you don't have a superpower, but in order to be super, you have to be systematic about it, right? You need your Batcave, you need your utility belt, you need your computers, you need Alfred. And what you're saying is, you thought you were Batman, you didn't put the suit on, and you went out, and then, as I'm sure in some of the Christopher Nolan films, you got your ass kicked, you know, and you have to change your suit so that when dogs bite it, you don't get the teeth in.
It's a bit in Batman Begins where he's down that big hole, right, in the gulag, and he just keeps on trying to climb out and falls down again like a spider in a bath. That's what it's like.
Yeah, maybe I should have been in Spider-Man, but there we go. And that was one of the things that I thought was really good, and I was kind of spent the week going through my brain and revisiting what was your own cat structure, and whether it probably didn't come through very clearly last week when we were talking about it, but the layers of structure that were in there, and so certainly as we ran through it and you talked about it, that there's some things which are tall structure and some things which were what you're actually working on, so the output, and they were a little mixed, I think, and that was one of the things I was struggling in my head to get through. It's like, oh yeah, well, get this agent to do this. Well, the fact that it's doing that, it's now going off and reading a pre-built system prompt, which is effectively in a library of system prompts. Yeah, that's part of the structure, that's part of the tooling, you know, that as we spoke about, which is, you know, in any of these tools, all they're doing is they're layering on system prompts, but behind the scenes, you don't see them. And so you'd explicitly built that, but then actually seeing that was then quite confusing. And that's got me thinking a lot about that. And we discussed a little bit, you know, an end user would just be going, what are you doing here? And so there are all these layers. So when I do thing A, it goes here, it gets this system prompt, and then it goes over here, it gets another one. When I do thing B, it's going somewhere completely different. When I do thing C, but all the time, it does these different things. It's going and it's getting tooling, and then it produces something. And it just so happens that some of that output was an update for the tool, which I think sort of made it extra confusing. So it sounds like what you've done is you said, right, well, you know, that works brilliant. As you say, the output and the running of OCAP was pretty good. But there was a lot of scaffolding in there. And then you said, all right, great. Now I can do that over here on this project. But you only took a couple of poles with you. You didn't take the whole scaffolding and bolt it all together. Because as you say, you haven't got time. You're thinking, right, well, that's actually quite complex. I'm not totally clear how I'd extract that in 22 minutes and start rebuilding. And so you only took some of the bits. And then, like you say, you work through. And then the classic, I think, for vibe coding is you get a good couple of iterations. And then you're thinking, yeah, this is flying. And then you hit the problem. And as you found, you'd gone some way down the road thinking, oh, this is good. I'll be able to fly without the other. And then the problem arises and suddenly you look back and think, oh, I fooled myself somewhat here.
Well, I think the Batman without the stuff analogy is actually perfect because, you know, Bruce Wayne is pretty badass, right? You know, he goes to the gulag, yeah, and trains in a hole and all that stuff. And I've been through the gulag and the hole, right? I'm good at this. I just forgot that I'm mostly really good at this because I built a bat suit, right? And I've got some cool cars and crap, and I just didn't bring any of them with me. I just sort of went out and started tackling criminals with my bare fists, right? And that's exactly what happened. And partly because I think my bat stuff is, implied there, is a little, it's a bit bloated, it's a bit messy, it's doing the job, but it's not where it needs to be by a long shot, right? So part of the issue we're here is it's not in a state that I could have extracted it. I mean, you know, the moral of the story is I shouldn't have been doing what I was doing, right? My infrastructure just isn't there yet, right? My bat suit isn't finished.
Well, and it's interesting what you say about tools, because I've been using something similar to AMP, but I'm not seeing AMP yet, but it's called Klein. And again, just plugs into VS Code and just operating exactly the same way. You know, it's just a chat on the left and then reads your repos and can do whatever, and you've got various parameters. But one of the things that I noticed, you know, because you can roll back, is each step it takes, where it says, okay, I'm thinking, right, I think I need to do these things, and then it'll commit that, and then it'll go and do something, and then it'll commit that, and then I say, oh, I'm thinking, oh, I need to do this, yeah, and it's laying it all out, like all the agents do. But each of those steps is actually a commit. So they, you know, they've done, you know, like similar to AMP, and they thought, okay, well, what would a developer need? Well, you know, having a commit at every single step, and they've just put that into their sort of base code. What was interesting as well is that the work I was doing then involved downloading someone had written their own client agent, which was basically exactly the same. And that was just a VSIX extension to VS Code. And you can just install, you know, it's like how you write for the marketplace, you know, exactly the same as you would for Obsidian or something. And so that was just written, loaded out, and that was slightly different. And clearly what both of these were doing were exactly what you were doing, which is providing a number of system prompts that get sent down to the model, and, you know, help sort of behind the scenes and actually execute the final command. You just don't see them. And so effectively I was comparing these two different tools for the same tasks, and clearly they were sending different things down, and the models they were using underneath was different. And I think, as you found, Claude Sonnet is pretty good, but still has some imperfections. But yeah, so that is, I found that interesting. It felt like that they were tools of, you know, exactly what you've done in OCAT, which is like build up the various stuff still behind the scenes. And so you still don't have that transparency. And so if it's not working for you, there's not much you can do because you don't know what it's sending down.
So there's a wider point here around environments as well, and something that anyone who's done coding for any period of time understands. Now, we all kind of love hate Git because it's horrible, but it does a job, right? It's not the only one, but it's the ubiquitous one. We don't want to do any of that crap, but we know we have to, and we know what horrible places we go to when we don't. But actually, and that needs to be built into the workflow. And I think that the probably actually, if there's one takeaway from my little episode, it's whatever you're doing, however you're doing it, check it in, please. Check it in really regularly, right? That's what it's there for. But the other thing that I had, this actually occurred a couple of weeks ago, was that I actually had, it was the original Taco repo, was on the place in my file system where it was under the domain of the Dropbox. So it was in my Dropbox folder. So Dropbox was syncing it. I had a Git repo. And then at some point I enabled Obsidian Sync, and the Obsidian Sync was pointing at that folder too, right? So I had three separate things that were doing syncing and versioning and moving stuff around. So if I move a file from point A to point B or rename it, it's got to be renamed in all the places that those particular systems are doing it, which with Dropbox is pretty seamless, but from the perspective of Git, it wasn't, but it could have been. Well, actually it was, because I had that Git repo in multiple places that I was keeping synced manually, and then Obsidian Sync was doing its thing, and Obsidian Sync has a little message saying, well, I notice you're on Dropbox, these things can probably interfere with each other, right? You're going into no man's land here by having two separate sort of syncing softwares running on the same repository. And then on top of that, you put a language modeler or an agent or something that has domain over those files, and files were disappearing, right? And like whole code files. And I was like, I don't know what did this, right? And so you start to trace back through history of one thing or another. And I could have deleted something on Obsidian via my mobile accidentally or deliberately, or by a Dropbox on one of my other machines that are all got synced up. And you go through the history in Dropbox and it's got holes in it. You see, no, there more stuff happened in between here and it hadn't recorded there. And it was like, this is a nightmare, right? Oh my God, what am I doing, yeah. right? I hadn't even noticed. And so I actually moved the whole OCAT repo and the Taco repo and some others out off of the Dropbox, out of the out of Subsidian's reach, and was like, well, all I'm going to have here is Git, right? And you can yeah. see what trouble that caused me, because now, had it still been under my Dropbox folder, I would have been able to rewind, because that takes a cut every time you hit save, which is pretty much permanently, when the files are being changed by an agent. So, environment matters. And I've also got all these Conda environments. They've all got slightly different things, different version of software. So I end up firing up an agent that freaks out because the thing that it was working on suddenly is throwing errors, notices that there are problems with the environment. A Python package is out of date for the version of some other Python package, starts manipulating on stuff on that. I realize at some point, because I'm using some other application that has different dependencies, that's broken now. And it's like, it's a mess. I mean, it's a total mess. And this is not, I'm not working on production systems that are powering, customer facing stuff. So none of this is catastrophic, and it's all recoverable from, but I've made a complete dog's dinner for myself. And I need to just tidy up. It's like I always bang on my other podcast about art, in my art podcast about tidying my studio, tidying my creative space. I don't need it to be clean all the time. That's not helpful, because otherwise I'll spend my whole time tidying. But sometimes you've just got to stop everything you're doing and do a complete blitz, right? And reorganize. What am I doing now? How do I need to get my stuff in order so that I can be working better on the tasks that I'm doing right now? And I am at that point. Yeah. It is a disaster zone. And so I think all of this pointed towards my particular little, episode this week.
Well, and deadlines and pressure always really bring it to the fore, because that's when you need your utility belt to have exactly what you want in it and what you know is there.
Yep.
It's no good to find that suddenly you loaded it with all the wrong things.
Well, Alfred came in and moved everything around. You know what I mean? My little cable thing for stuff? And where's my little bat gun? Oh, Alfred cleaned it. It's in the dishwasher. And that's what it's like, because Alfred, maybe I'll need to rename all my agents Alfred. We can carry the Batman metaphor quite to an extreme here, can't we? But I guess my second wave of a thought about this, because there's so much more I could drill down on, there is what it does point towards in terms of skills for people in our arena who want to work this way. Because at some point I'm thinking about some people within my domain that, need upskilling. And what does that mean now? Right. What does it mean that you've got a new, an apprentice or a junior data scientist, junior dev? I think we stay broadly on the data scientist side of things here. And you're thinking, well, look, blank sheet. Right now, where are we now? What do I need to teach this person in the realm where, vibe data sciencing exists, but also data science is a skill in its own right, plus the analytical side and all of that, and also the business facing side of things. One part of my brain going, just give them, Klein or AMP or VS Code, whatever, and just let them do it in English, and then thinking, no, that's a terrible idea, and I just keep discovering why.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and as you move forward, it's going to be really interesting. Because if things go well, then you're going to be able to vibe out stuff. And as you found, when it goes well is almost where you're learning the least. And so I guess like any amount of automating and using automation, it's about that layering and the consistency, a bit like you found. And so if you're a junior, I mean, you're still going to need to know. Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say this, as we would say, you have to go through a certain amount of learning. You know, you need to learn the Python or R or whatever you're using. You need to learn the techniques. And I can understand someone say, well, why bother? Because this thing's going to do it for me. Yeah, it will do it for you. And you're going to learn the very least when it's doing it well. The moment it fails, what are you going to do? Because if you don't understand anything, or your skills are very basic level because you've never had to up them, you're not going to be able to solve the problem.
Yeah, it's a conundrum, because this was exactly the problem. What turned out to be the issue that resulted in the agent running riot and then just giving up was actually a fairly simple problem. And I don't think that someone who was just behaving that way would have spotted. And I also think that one of the roots of the issue I had is that I didn't try and engineer the solution. I just told it to do what I wanted it to do. Here's the outcome I wanted, right? And I just don't think you can do that. I don't think you can. And I don't think we're anytime soon going to be in a position where simply describing an outcome gets you a system that's maintainable, right? You know, you might be lucky, but because I was not prescriptive enough. And I don't see, if you haven't learned the foundations, in fact, if you haven't learned some fairly involved engineering concepts, then you're not going to be able to be prescriptive in the right way. And then you're not going to be able to diagnose problems, right? And if, as you point out, all you've ever done is tap English words into a prompt, I mean, this is a recipe for disaster. I mean, I know that old geezers like us always say this type of thing when new things come along. And I'm willing to be proved wrong here, but as it stands, anyone doing that, what I've been doing, they shouldn't be doing it without the right skills, though.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, to flip it around how might you learn in this environment is quite interesting. You know, if you think about the process of getting these agents to run, you know, as we did last time, put in a certain amount of prompting, and you know, if you're a learning data science, you'd probably be tuning into the environment quite and maybe thinking, well, like, yeah, this thing works off good prompting, so I need to have those libraries there, just in the same way that you built OCAT. When it's doing a dev change, it needs to have a dev guide. When it's doing a business analytics thing, it needs to have an analytical and statistics bent. When it's, you know, the analysis side, I need to have some business files in there. And so you'd probably be thinking on that. And so then when you're actually running stuff, you're sitting there, you're watching the agent. And this is one of the things I found was a shift in how you work. And I think you've got to be a little bit careful of burnout, is you're sitting there watching the agent and it's reasoning and writing down its reasoning. Okay. So it says, you know, okay, you've asked me to do this, and it breaks that out. I don't know if you listened to the practical AI episode a couple of ones ago, that a guy on from NVIDIA, and he was talking about what that actually is. And it's just exactly the same models, these reasoning models. They're exactly the same. There's nothing different, but they have a step, which essentially the way he told it is taking your query and, you know, it has a bent of, well, let's break this down first. And that's that first reasoning step you get. You know, it says, oh, the user's asked me to do this. All right, I should therefore take these steps, and it gives you its 8-point plan, and then it's executing those 8 points. So it does 1, 2, 3, or 3 failed because this didn't happen, so I'm now trying alternatives. So as a new data scientist looking through that, you're aware of the prompt you've given it, which could be quite complex layering going on, like you've got in OCAT. You've probably given it a fairly decent prompt in the query you've given it, you know, like do some analysis, take this data, you've got some thoughts. And then it's writing down these steps, which can actually be, you know, quite complex. All right, it's asking me to do this, what I'm going to do this. And you can just kind of glance over it, or you can actually follow it and go, okay, well, why is it doing that? Okay, well, that's good. It's doing this. And that's pretty intense. This is what I've been finding, that if you're actually following it along and trying to interpret it, you know, it's like someone saying, it's like doing a walkthrough. You're sitting with someone and they're saying, oh, you know, here's the code I'm doing. Look, I'm now doing this. And you're going, okay, well, why are you doing that particular command? Sometimes, you know, you can get distracted at that lower level. Sometimes you just go, all right, yeah, you're reading a file and you get all that. Okay, you know, don't need to look at the detail of that. So I can understand that. But if you're doing the same with these reasoning steps, and there's definitely some learning you could have from that. And also you could get quite adept at seeing, you know, out of his 8-step plan, step four was where it went wrong. And then, you know, you do your rollback to step four, give it a slightly improved instruction and go from there. So I can see a flip side here, which in that process itself, you could get more learning and start to do things in a different way. Whereas we might want to go, all right, well, you know, let's jump into the code. Oh, I can see what it's doing wrong. Someone else might say, well, you know, I don't have that level of skill, but what I do have is that I can see where it's gone wrong in terms of its process. And I can roll it back to that point and then push it a little bit more at that point on certain detail, and then, you know, let it write its better layer rather than me prescribing that it now needs to do that better layer. You know, you think, well, how could you do that? Well, you don't have the skills to say you're missing these three libraries, you need to go and do this, but you might have the skill to say, be careful about going wrong and doing X, Y, and Z. In other words, learning from the previous step, telling it what not to do and to be careful of that, and then see if it can then find the libraries that it needs. So I could definitely see somebody learning and driving in that manner, and therefore not actually needing to fall back on the skills that maybe we have. Does that sound reasonable?
I think like everything around these things, it sounds superficially reasonable, but I think in the, and there's nothing wrong with it. I think a very diligent learner will look at it like that, but there's better ways to learn with a model than that, with AI than that, for a start, for all the reasons you pointed out as you went along. And I think in reality, people either are under pressure to get things done from someone else or just want to get to the next exciting thing. And so when they come up with their list of their plan in English, they're going to do thing A, thing B, and thing C. It all sounds very reasonable. I usually scan those and go, well, that seems about roughly in line, because I can always back it out or whatever if I've been doing, you know, doing my job properly. But I think that the tendency is always going to be to just, yeah, go do that. Go on. Sounds good. Look, go on, do it. You know what you're doing. And then, I mean, part of the issue I had this week was not that everything was irredeemable after the model had run riot. It's that I didn't know what it had done and how it had structured it, right? Because it had put things in multiple files that ran there. There was a, you know, there was like a modules folder that had several different things, and within that it had functions that it was using, but functions it had been using before that had been disregarded, and you know, there was multiple levels of abstraction in something that had taken 10 minutes to build, right? And it wasn't like that I couldn't have figured all of this out. I have the skills, right? What I lacked was the time. Right. And so if you lack both the skills and the time, you're screwed if you end up in it with either spaghetti code or just some really odd error that ultimately will boil down to a library mismatch or something because you're on the two newest versions of two Python libraries that are a way newer than the model that you're using in terms of when it was trained. And we can troubleshoot that. And I think that once you get to this point where you've got thousands of lines of code because you can, then you're screwed regardless if you don't have the right level of skills and or you don't have the time.
So and this is where the rubber really hits the road. And I think you've got those two things. You get, you know, you've got a pressure of deadline and that kind of feeling of, well, just let it get on with it. And yeah, always a bit of losing focus. And that was one of the things I found this week was, you know, it's a different way of working. You know, now as data scientists, we're quite used to doing a lot of deep thought work. And so you're getting right into it and someone interrupts you and it's like, you know, what planet am I on? You know, it can be quite shocking sometimes when you come out of that depth and you're holding a lot of things in working memory. You know, you're holding your code, you're holding your analysis, you've got numbers, and that can be, you know, that's pretty intensive. Obviously, it's why we love the job. What I found watching these models was if you're following it through and then it's giving you some code, like you say, you've not written that code. So now you've got to concentrate because you're looking at someone else's code, right? You're trying to understand what it's doing with a few comments. And so you're taking that in and then it's doing another step. And perhaps you might think, well, why is it taking that step? That's not what I would do. And so then you're fighting your bias again. And again, you're thinking, you're trying to work out, you're analyzing, your problem solving. And then when it comes to the bit where if you were doing it as a human, you'd go, oh, okay, well, I need to code my way out of that. And then you'd type three or four lines of code and you'd think, oh, now I've typed, that doesn't quite look right. You know, and that act of typing and looking is when you, is almost, you give your unconscious mind a bit of time to think about it, because now you're having to do, you know, physically type. Your brain is suddenly focusing on getting the syntax right. So suddenly you're into a mechanical, you know, more monkey brain. And the analyst can take a few seconds to rest. And I often find you do the typing out, you get to the end and you think, yeah, I know this is not going to work because I think it's going to be that. And then you run it and you think, yeah, that's right. It's something else. It's going to be this. And so that act of just doing something slavishly boring, of just typing and getting your syntax right, and thinking, oh yeah, how do I do that again? And maybe go off and look that up, you know, takes you away from the problem in hand. Whereas I was finding with these agents, you're a bit full on, because when you get to that bit and you go, okay, right, now I would sit back. Well, the agent goes and does it. So you think, right, well, that would need this new module. And now it's there. You haven't had the 45 minutes of typing that out and sort of mulling things over the back of your mind, because it's suddenly there. So now you're back into concentration mode and you're doing it again and you sort of sort something out. And then when it comes to the mechanical bit, it does it again in a few seconds. And so I found that I felt like I was, you know, having to be much more in that focused zone, which is obviously a little bit more tiring. And I found did start to sort of, for no particular reason, make me start to feel a bit tense. And I think it's just because you're using that, you know, deep analytical part of your brain continuously. And yeah, you know, it tends to be my reaction when I do this a lot and I get involved in things, is I come out and I feel a bit uncomfortable because I feel like something's going on and I've missed it because I've just been so involved for so long.
Well,
it's unexpected.
It's that relinquishing of control. Because think about this, it's almost like you're a driving instructor. You're not just thinking about, so we get in these, as you described, these mindsets where we're having to sort of almost, there's a lot of meta thinking going on, right? So think about how I need to think about this, right? Because I've got to think about the code that I need to write, but I've got to think about the problem that I've got to solve. I've got to make these twains meet. I've got to actually think quite abstractly about things to get to the point I want, while thinking, well, what is the output here? What does the client need? All of this stuff. And we spend a lot of time organizing our thoughts and sort of moving bits and pieces around to try and get ourselves in the right mindset, but also with the right tools in the right place, right? It's like the mise en place. It's the putting the things together that you need to do the job that you've got to do. And that's quite tiring. It's the brain work bit. And so you're having to do that for yourself, which is tiring, but you're also having to do that for the model, right? For the agent. And you're having to think, yeah, you're having to try and second guess if I tell it to do this with these words, now, you know, I'm having to think about what I want, and now I'm having to think about how it might do it and how the different language that I use might change that. And whereas you can noodle around with a few lines of code and mess it up and get the wrong thing, because we get into that mindset, why will I? I'm not going to sit here and think about whether or not if I do this particular cut of this data frame, whether it's going to give me what I want, when I can just do that cut and see, because it's going to take me 15 seconds, right? And so you're sort of cutting the corner, as you've already described on a lot of that stuff. But you're also having to second guess what the model might do, and I find that quite exhausting. And that's why there's a certain amount of spaghetti junctionness with my sort of system prompt labyrinth for OCAT, and it needs to be simpler, because you've got all that meta thinking along the way, is that you're creating thought detritus and code detritus and prompt detritus all the way along. You need to tidy up regularly, but when you need to tidy up, you also need to think about, well, what of this was good and what of this was bad, and what of this, if I change or I do it in a different way, is going to result in a different behavior from what I need, right? And and it's back to the sort of the anxiety comes, I guess, either a driving instructor, more importantly, you're a you're training someone to fly a plane, right? Is that you're supervising someone who could kill you, right? And that's stressful, right? And I think, yes, okay, it's unlikely the warp agent's going to kill me, but who knows? Back to the AI apocalypse, but it could blow. It blew my deadline, right? And that's stressful, right? Because I'd relinquished a bunch of control to something that I didn't know how it was going to react. And so, what's the problem when you've got a driving trainee or a plane flying trainee? A pilot trainee, it's not that they're flying around in good conditions, doing the thing that they've done over and over again. It's that suddenly there's a big sort of gust of wind or a storm turns up. I don't know shit about aviation, but you got to imagine there's stuff like that, that the trainee pilot might react really weirdly to. And at that point, things get very, very hairy indeed, right? It's stressful.
Yeah.
And this stuff is supposed to be relaxing. You're supposed to be taking weight off me, agent, not shoveling it on.
Well, I think that's really interesting. And that relinquishing of control really makes me think of the analogy which lots of people have been using around agents and saying, think of them like employees. Yeah. And I've heard a few times that people saying, you know, the skills of the future are the fact that you can manage these agents as you would manage employees. And that kind of washed over me and I didn't think much about it. And I'm not sure it holds up closely, but I think I like the sound of it, because as you said, what you're doing is you're relinquishing control just as you would as a manager, you know, and this is where lots of people have problems with doing it, is because they relinquish control and then they don't like the result. And then they jump in and you get seagull management, people swooping down. And you know, one of the big tricks of managing is, you know, delegation. Be very clear up front what you want, you know, get clear reporting, and then be coaching. And I think there's a similar model here. And I don't know if it's exactly the same, but I think the general idea of, well, we're going to have a number of agents and we need to be able to coax them and coach them to get them to do what we want, even though we're not doing it. And we need to do it in a way which is not stressful for the manager. We're not worried too much about the stress of the agent employee at this point. We'll wait for the AI consciousness to come along for that. But I think, and that's where I think it is slightly different, because you're not dealing with a human. So you don't get all of that interactivity and that feedback loop. I mean, you get some of it perhaps, and you could certainly have a layer, you know, you could certainly put system prompt in, which makes your agent perform like an employee and ask questions and say, oh yeah, please sir, will you advise me, and all of that things to make it softer. But I think there's definitely something here about, it's not something you go and tell what's doing, it does it, you know, like traditional automation, press that button, it does what it says on the tin, great, it's now done. You're asking it to do more complex things. It may go wrong, and we have to find ways of managing our reaction to that, as well as, you know, managing the outcome. And whilst sensible advice would be, don't get it to do something that you're on a deadline. You just know the pressures of work mean that, well, if that was a rule, no one would ever use anything because, you know, you're on a deadline. And so I think we do have to find ways of managing how we do these. And some of that will come through structure. And, you know, as you found, needing to take more of the structure and get that lined up first. But some of it's going to have to come from how we react and deal with these agents. You know, and that idea of managing an agent and think of it as a team, and not in the same way. And I think that's where it falls down. It's not, you wouldn't manage a team of agents the way you manage a team of humans. But there's something there which says, as a manager of them, you're not the doer. They're not just going to do what they're told, and you've got to find a way to navigate that.
I don't actually think it's closer than you think. I think it's a good analogy in that it's almost the same, right? But it's not, yeah. And it has to be an analogy because we're not dealing with humans here, right? And so the empathy aspect has sort of been stripped out, right? And they're not going to quit because you got a bit shirty with them about something, right? Although we can come back to the strange feeling of empathy with language models at some point. But the thing is that the mechanics aren't that different, right? So you've got human employee A who is really, really diligent, but has a tendency to get completely obsessed by details when she should actually just ship the work and move on. And then you've got this other employee. She's really, really, she's all over the place, but she comes out with moments of genius. And you keep these two around because they're both useful. And so sometimes you need your unpredictable employee to be a bit more predictable, and sometimes you need your predictable employee to be a little bit more freewheeling, right? And you manage them differently, right? And so I think you will have to think about that. You've got different models, different agents doing different types of things, and sometimes you do want to deploy the more creative one, you know, and you turn up the temperature LLM terms. And sometimes you really want it to, you know, want a different model with different sets of things to behave differently. And that is like managing humans, right? And I think it's good to think about it that way. I would say that the part of the problem we've got with a Gen AI as an industry is, and back to go listen to Ed Zitron's various more intensely amusing rants on business idiots, right, is that you've got managers managing very, very intelligent humans doing deeply sophisticated things that they themselves don't have any understanding of, right? And part of the problem we've got at the moment is that, and that if you are a senior developer, a person managing a bunch of Java devs or a bunch of Rust devs, Python devs, right, it's pretty much a prerequisite that you understand what they do, and you can step in when there's a problem and help remediate that. And that's going to be code-based. It's going to be skills-based. It's going to be based on technical things that if you are simply someone managing humans or someone managing agents, that you won't know what to do, right? You won't know how to help them solve the problems. And you won't know how to articulate their way through things when they hit a problem that is both technical and, you know, user-facing, right? And you can't help them reason their way through that. And so we get to this point whereby if no one's learning the skills, who becomes a senior developer, right? Who becomes that person who's corralling all these agents? Because they do need to know the skills that those agents have, right? They do need to know the aptitudes of those agents and how and where to deploy them. I don't really see that the situation's changed dramatically other than we're starving the system of people who can do that role in the future.
Well, this is something which I felt as well this week, you know, this idea that I suddenly am just overseeing and sorting out problems, you know, does put you in that expert seat, you know, a little bit like a chess master. You know, there are six games going on. He's just walking over, not necessarily that he's even playing them, but maybe there are six pairs of people and he's just coming over and giving the eye away. You should make that move. Oh, all right, you got into a bit of a mess there. You know, here's what you should have done. And so I do feel like there's definite role for those experts to dip in and dip out for that exact reason. What's interesting here, and perhaps some people are thinking this as well. So one thing, as I thought, as you were speaking there about managing a team is, you know, we've learned quite a lot over the last, well, since the First and Second World Wars about how to build teams and then in the business workplace, not just in the army. And so you've got all of these, you know, kind of personality types, you know, that make up a well-rounded team. So one thought there is, well, why wouldn't you create those eight different types, you know, the completer, finisher, the plant, the ideas person, the chair person, you know, create a different bot with a, you know, a different bias and then join them all together so that your team is well-rounded and that your process uses, you know, all of them in different times, various measures. And then part of that as well is as a manager, you know, it's always good to have a coach, you know, we would have called a mentor maybe in the past, but definitely a coach that you can get through. So you were talking about the problem of, well, we've got to a point where I can't solve that problem. Well, why wouldn't you then have a bot whose specific issue is one helping me to manage my reactions to it? That might be one bot, and another one might be the expert bot who is used to coming in. You articulate where you're struggling, why you can't see this, why you got that, and then it, you know, it's like a troubleshooting bot. Now, it may not be any better than the bot that's run it in the first place, but as we know, when you give them a different bent, you do sometimes get different answers. So I think what I'm saying is there is, for all of these problems, can you just not create another agent which is, you know, has a bias to solving that particular aspect?
So, of course, an agent's a low cost and fairly easy to deploy, and very easy to deploy in a very haphazard way, as I discovered. And so suddenly you've now got 500 management bots, right, to run, to manage 10 delivery bots. And at which point, where do you troubleshoot the problem in that particular environment, right? Now, there are problems. I get everything you're saying, and my brain is literally torn in two. But I do love the idea of Belbin for bots. You heard it here first, and then we're going to have Myers-Briggs for machines, right?
Yes,
Belbin's for bots and Myers-Briggs for machines. So we'll be marketing that from next week. I have to go and see a man about a very real world machine. This is a car. So I really, really have to go. Otherwise, he's going to get quite grumpy at me. So I don't have any AI bots I can send off to do that. So if anyone's working on a dealing with car men bot, I'm all ears. But in the meantime, I have real world to deal with. So I have to go. Yes.
Yeah, I too have car issues today. So, yeah.
Oh, good.
Well, let's hope that we both come back in a, what was it called? Knight Rider, was it? The car that was run by
Kit. Kit.
And Kit. And we'll be David Hasselhoff. Yeah, is that right?
I'm always David Hasselhoff. I don't know about you, but, you know, every day is a David Hasselhoff day for me. I'm just about to buzz off and stand on the Berlin Wall and sing at some people. It happens. Time's time.
Brilliant. Right, well, until next time, Mr. Hoff, I shall we'll speak again.
Yes, yes, indeed. This has been fun. See you soon.
The confusion matrix. Confusion.